Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hey everybody, so we're excited for this episode. As you know, we've kind of changed up the format a little bit. And on this episode, we are going to be talking about some really interesting stuff. We're going to be talking about Nelson's 10 usability heuristics.
Yep.
And we're really going to start focusing on principles. And our last episode where we first started to do this did really well. We heard a lot of really good feedback from you guys. So we're excited for that.
Yep.
But real quick, just to get out of the way, we have some podcast type stuff. First, of course, is that we're on iTunes. So, you know, if you want to subscribe to the podcast or leave us a review, which really, really helps, go and do that. We also have the RSS feed. If you want to grab that, put it into your favorite podcast reader. That's also on the website.
Yep.
And last but not least, you can find all our episodes from 1 to 16 on the website,
which is designreviewpodcast.com.
Which is designreviewpodcast.com.
So we're starting to talk about Nielsen's usability heuristics. If you've never read these before, or if you have and have totally forgotten about them, go look it up. You can easily find it on Google. I'm not going to read the URL that we have because it's kind of long.
We'll link it on the website on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited we're doing this. We're going to do two at a time.
Yeah.
And I've read these in the past, but it's really good to always have a refresher and really keep these at the forefront and kind of reapply them in new challenges, things like that.
Yeah. I was actually asked about this in a job interview one time. They were asking me which one was my favorite. And at the time, I was kind of like, well, I didn't actually memorize them because, you know, I just looked them up on the website. Like, who memorizes stuff, right?
Exactly.
But it's good to keep them in mind. It's good to kind of, I don't know, what's the word? But it's good to know about them and familiarize yourself with them from time to time because, you know, yeah, you forget about them every so often. But these were written by Jacob Nielsen, I don't know, years and years and years ago. And he's part of Norman Nielsen Group. And of course, who are these guys, right? They're like, I don't know, honchos of like design and like usability and all kinds of stuff.
It's funny, on their website, they call themselves, well, not that, I don't think, they kind of quote, I think, some article about them, but they call themselves like UX gurus.
Yeah.
I just imagine them in like, you know, monk garb
on
the top of a mountain. But these guys go way back and really are some of like the founders of a lot of the UX stuff that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Nielsen is a human computer interaction guy. He's written a ton of stuff, this included.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Don Norman is also part of that, which is everyone's favorite book, which we'll also link to, is Design of Everyday Things. If you haven't read that, you should go read that as well.
Yeah. Listen to the podcast while you read that book. So we're talking about heuristics. So what actually is a heuristic? I don't know if people have even heard the term before or not, but
I know it's one of those things you know just because people use it all the time, but you've never really like looked up the definition.
Yeah.
So when you asked that, I looked it up, and it's so the adjective is enabling a person to discover or learn something for themselves.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like a hands-on type thing. I love that. Because that's the way learning should be. It should always be heuristic, right? It should be, you should be enabling them to learn for themselves, because that's the way that people remember the best.
Yeah. The sort of non-technical way that I learned about the definition, well, somebody described it to me as an expert judgment, basically. And that seemed to make sense to me. But I don't know, is there an actual better definition?
Well, the one I picked was from the dictionary, but it also has another definition, which is the process or method. And so, yeah, I think if you can combine all of those, you know, it's an expert's opinion on the best way to do something and kind of framing it in a way that you're going to be able to apply that easily.
Yeah. Cool. So there's 10 of them that Jacob Nielsen has written. We're going to talk about the first two. which are number one, it's the visibility of system status. And he writes that the system should always keep users informed about what's going on through appropriate feedback within reasonable time. The second one is the match between the system and the real world. And so what this means is the system should speak the user's language with words, phrases, and concepts familiar to the user rather than system-oriented terms. It should also follow real-world conventions, making information appear in a natural and logical order.
Yeah, I mean these are kind of the ones you use every day when you're building a system for kind of digesting information, especially like when you have a big UI to kind of put on top of a product.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best place to start applying these. I feel like they're somewhat hard to do towards the end, you know, if you're just sort of like trying to inject it.
Right.
But like I always say, like it's better to, you know, be, what's the word? Like not as consistent. Mm-hmm. And improve over time than try and be consistent all the time. I think that's something that I've always been I always struggle with is like, I'm like, okay, if I can't make it, this is going to look so different. If I improve this, it's going to look so different than all the crap, but it's better to do that and to have it get better over time.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what are some, I mean, how do you interpret visibility of system status? Like what does that mean to you? Like, how do you kind of put it in your own words?
Yeah. So for me, a lot of it boils down to basically providing feedback in the right way. And feedback is, you know, pretty broad, right? It can be anything from a simple little animation to even like progress bars or things like that, so that when the user is actually interacting with the system, the application or the app or whatever will actually respond to what the user's doing.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this, you know, not directly, but we've talked about this a lot in past episodes, that users really need that immediate feedback. For every action that they take, they need an immediate reaction.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a law of nature, you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of, it's funny because that kind of goes back to number two, which is match between system and the real world. This visibility of system status is natural. It's a natural thing. You know, mm-hmm. we expect when we take an action for there to be a reaction. So a good example of that when it fails is, you know, I think something that we've all done is you submit something, you click the submit button and, you know, it doesn't do anything or it just goes to the next page and there's no like, congratulations. It just goes to the next page. And then you're totally unsure and you creates this like unease.
Yeah.
And then I've also noticed that it also starts to create doubt in everything that they do. Because there wasn't like a very direct correlated reaction, then they start thinking, okay, what could have this other action I took, what could it be doing that I don't know?
Yeah.
And this causes a lot of issues. Like one thing that I've had a lot of user feedback recently about a specific item, and it wasn't broken. It's just that they had such doubt in the system because of some bugs, past bugs, that they just expected it to be incorrect.
Interesting.
And so that can really start messing with you because then you instantly think this is broken or you instantly think that it's giving you the wrong information, things like that. So it's funny because another kind of thing you could look at that's very correlated to that is like the VR systems.
Yeah.
When the reaction time, because we've had VR for a while, but the reason that it didn't catch on was, you know, the technology wasn't there yet, so there was like a slight lag all the time.
Yeah.
And this would make people throw up.
Yeah, definitely.
so if that's like, you know, an interface, like that's how it makes people feel. They feel like very uneasy.
Yeah. So the key really for the visibility of system status thing is right at the end where he says providing feedback within a reasonable time. Right. If a system's providing feedback, but it's like minutes later or, you know, something, it's not within a reasonable expectation of what a system should do. So that's the key, is finding out what's reasonable and then doing it.
There's also times where, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, get to the server and back in time, and you need to start thinking of things like spinners and, you know, some client side stuff and really craft that so that there's an immediate reaction, even though if there's like a spinner or a, you know, just so that there's some sort of reaction to what they're doing.
Yep. And so what about the match between the system and the real world? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to, you know, to take a step back and put your user experience, like the thing you're crafting, into almost like a conversation between you and the user. And like, what would that look like?
Yeah.
I love that. There's this great video of, I think it's like Google Shopping or Google AdWords or something in real life or something like that.
Yeah,
And they do that. This guy comes up to buy something and he tries to log in and like he has to do all the stuff just to buy like a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
And when you put it in that, like, you know, in that situation, it really helps uncover the ridiculousness about some of the stuff that we do some of the stuff that we ask, like, wow, like this would be really tedious or really annoying in real life.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's always a really helpful tool in designing. But then I also think of stuff like skeuomorphism, you know, which was a super helpful in onboarding a bunch of people who didn't know about technology, like my parents, like my grandma. And it was really effective because, I mean, I tried to get my parents on a PC for a long time and they weren't able to. And then I handed them an iPhone and I didn't have to teach them anything. So,
oh, nice.
You know, there's times even in the look of it, the actions, like it can be really effective.
Mm-hmm. So they were like taking selfies and stuff like right away.
Right away, yeah. Before it was a thing, they were just like, they're ahead of the trend.
So yeah, matching to the real world is always good. One of the key things I think that he talks about in that heuristic is not aligning things to systems. I know I've definitely worked on software products that had originally been designed to fit like a database schema or, you know, something like that, because it was easier for the engineers to build it that way and they could fix bugs faster and stuff like that when they did it that way. But in reality, what they were actually creating was a product that was difficult to understand because they were trying to match to, you know, just some database architecture that nobody knew about except for, you know, the few engineers that had created it. And so the second we tried to turn it around and say, okay, let's redesign the interface so that it actually aligns with what users understand and use language that they understand and position it in a way that people will understand. And not very surprisingly, you know, the usability scores and ratings for that started to improve. And so it's a really important thing for designing any kind of application that you really try and understand things from the user's perspective and make it feel like a more natural kind of interaction for them.
That's awesome. Did they kind of give you guys more respect after that?
No, but but you know, it was definitely.
I know, it's so funny. I remember. I mean, there was times our design team at my last job where we would, you know, increase the ROI of a page by like 20%, like a very important page, which would add like tens of thousands of dollars per month, you know, to the bottom line and just from that one page. And like, you think like, oh wow, like, okay, we showed them what we do. We showed them how, you know, how we do it. And then we did it and it worked. And okay, now we're going to build some trust, but it's a lot harder than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about these things, but we talked about why they're important, but is there anything else we want to talk about why these things are important?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they really go together. Matching between the system and the real world is something that is... actually, I forgot who said it, but a great designer said that, you know, the best inspiration, the best for design is nature, you know, because that's something that we already know. We already have a lot of history with it. So there's a lot of things that you can take, and it doesn't always have to translate itself as skeuomorphism. When people read that, they usually think, skeuomorphism, but that's like a more visual sense. Mm-hmm. But like, for example, with material design, they're also bringing in this same heuristic, but they're bringing it in a different way, like without the visual kind of heaviness that, you know, that things move. Like when you click on like a card, for example, in material design, it moves, it opens up, the picture expands, and the text right. comes from somewhere to somewhere.
Yeah.
And so they've applied that with animation and things like that. And it's really effective because when you're clicking and moving between things, it feels like everything makes sense. It's very logical. Oh yeah, okay, that's going mm-hmm. over there. That's going off screen. I can get it by going back to that area and bringing it into screen. So when you start thinking of it as like a physical space, or you start thinking, okay, wow, how do drawers work, or how do, you know, things like that, there's like a ton of stuff you can glean from that and put into your interface. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have to say on that.
No. Yeah. Well, no, it's interesting because I wasn't actually thinking of it literally make it match something that's real, because my interpretation has always been maybe more conceptual around it. Like,
well, because sometimes people need that that bridge.
Yeah.
You know, and skeuomorphism was that for iPhone, for iOS.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like in the beginning, you had like real knobs and things like that. But as people, that becomes natural, you know, to work with digital interfaces more for a decade or so, you know, then you can move to more conceptual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool because I like I said, I always thought of it more conceptually. Something else that might be kind of interesting to talk about is recently the news about Marissa Mayer's two-tap rule for apps.
The two-tap rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where have we heard this before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was the three-click rule. You have to get to everything in the site, yeah. whatever it is, in three clicks.
Yeah.
And this actually, real quick, the background of that was came from like this study that users could only keep up to like 3 to 7 items in their head at one time. Mm-hmm. And that's like a completely misunderstood kind of UX, I don't know, like just like a wives tale, or I forget, I don't know what the term is, but you know, like that's like a misconception in UX. Because really what that research showed was that they can keep 3 to 5 things in their head at a time. When you click something, you're not keeping 3 to 5 things in your head at a time. You're reassessing the page where you're in. So, that doesn't necessarily, I mean, obviously it's good to get people where they need to quickly, but as long as it's, they know exactly where they're going and they're happy with how much time it takes. So that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, how do you feel about the two-tap rule?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting, but it also seems kind of arbitrary. Like, everything has to be two taps. Like, I guess if I was trying to design something, like, of course you want to keep things accessible, as you said, but in the context of these heuristics, like if it makes more sense for things to be pushed deeper or brought up closer, you should have the freedom to be able to do that without necessarily like strictly adhering to this like concept of two taps. Because I don't even know where that comes from, really.
Yeah, I think it really goes back to measuring the wrong thing. Like that's one of the things that trip up a lot of groups. You know, you start measuring page views, you know, for ads, and what do we get? Like we get like these horrible listicles where each thing is on its own page, right?
Yeah.
And that creates a horrible user experience, and then people end up, you know, fleeing those sites.
Yeah.
So measuring the right thing is so important in your project, and it really does take one of those, you know, childish, you know, string of whys to get to the bottom of it. But you know, is it the lifetime value of a user? Is it, you know, so probably in that case, it's less about two taps, but everything should be, you know, within a couple seconds, or maybe it should be the user should, you know, feel like it's quicker. And I don't know, there's something else to really hone in on, because it's, users don't always care about taps. I mean, we type with the iPhone keyboard. We obviously don't care about how many taps something takes. when I'm doing like 100 extra taps a session because I have to delete and then retype and
I know.
Stuff like that.
I know. And what if like a good experience is actually 3 taps, or, you know, who knows?
Yeah, we're like Flappy Birds, you know.
Yeah.
it's a lot of taps, you know. But, you know, one thing quick on, like, to kind of put on the other side a little bit, to play devil's advocate, is sometimes arbitrary rules like that can really start to spark some creativeness in the team.
Sure.
And, you know, that, like, for example, you know, Instagram forces you to be a square, you
yeah.
know, and that was crazy in the beginning. People hated that. They're like, real photographers will never use this. And now it's like required for, for photographers. But, so sometimes like an arbitrary rule like that will just get the team's juices flowing. And maybe that's what she's after. Also, you know, maybe they also like, if the app's getting big, too big, you know, to be three taps and four taps, then maybe we need to break it out into its own sure. app, because, you know, you have these app constellation strategies now. So, you know, maybe there's some stuff there, but again, I would be really sensitive around, are we measuring the right thing?
Well, yeah. And I think, like, you know, as we already said, two taps to access important information. Sure. That makes a lot of sense, but it's a question in my mind of like, well, how strict does it really have to be? Are there cases where, you know, things really need to be two taps away, or can it be deeper? Because in design, we talk a lot about hierarchies and information hierarchies and stuff like that. And less information, less important stuff doesn't need to be that accessible, right? So, anyways. Right. All right, we got a couple apps. Each of us have selected a couple different apps to talk about in relation to these two heuristics that we've been discussing. Do you want to go first, or should I go first?
Why don't you go first? I'm looking at yours here. You have Jawbone and you have Breeze. I don't think I've played with both of these, so I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we were talking about Carrot last show, which is like, you know, calorie counting, and Jawbone Up, if you've not heard of it. Jawbone, of course, makes, you know, fitness trackers and other like Bluetooth little gizmos and gadgets. And also the little Jawbone speaker thing. I forgot what it's called. But they released a standalone app for fitness tracking. It's called Up. It's free. You can get it on the App Store for free. The other one is called Breeze. I think it's by Runkeeper. It's another sort of
fitness
app. Yeah, Fitness Keeper. And basically Breeze is a step counter app similar to like what the Fitbit does.
So do you use that?
I use them. So the background is I started using Breeze, let's see, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. And I really liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. There's a lot of interesting things, and I'll talk about it later. But when I saw Jawbone release the Up app, I downloaded it, but I never actually did anything with it. And for like months and months and months, it had been sitting on my phone. And finally, when we talked about the heuristics, I was like, oh, this might be a good chance to like see how those concepts apply to this like fitness thing. And so when I signed up, and I have a bunch of screenshots that I can share, I was actually pretty surprised at how different these two apps were when they deal with, you know, not just fitness, but how different they were in applying these kinds of principles that we're talking about. So let's just start with Jawbone.
So, right off the bat, who wore it better?
Right away, Breeze was the better of the two, interestingly enough.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, wow. I mean, Jawbone is usually the, you know, the design people look up to for design stuff.
I know, and that's the part that totally like blew me away, was because like I was expecting Jawbone to have this like amazing user experience, and it kind of wasn't.
It reminds me of like 2006 or something.
Yeah.
It looks a bit dated.
Well,
it's got like that 3D all white, you know, avatar looking guy running. I mean,
that you might be looking at the wrong, are you looking at the one that doesn't require the tracker?
No, it's Up, tracker required by Jawbone.
There's another one.
Okay.
Because it does look nice. It's not that
This looks the same.
The app actually looks nice, and it's, you know, for example, when you first open it and you go in through like the sign up process, the first screen you see has like a couple buttons, but in the background is like a video of like all these fit, beautiful people doing exercises, and it's like really inspiring, right?
Right.
But you get through kind of the sign up process and you get into the onboarding, and it was like a total letdown. It was just basically a single screen, and it overlaid on top of the UI, and it had like there were like four or five different arrows on the screen just with text pointing at different things.
Ooh,
And it was just like,
big no-no.
yeah, it was like, what the heck is this?
Oh, man.
And, you know, we talked about the match between the system and the real world. The text in there was kind of like not very informative. It seemed very kind of technical sounding, like, do this to get this feature, which was like, well, I don't even know what that feature is. Why do I want it? And so it just made it really difficult to even know how the app works. But Breeze, on the other hand, I thought did both of these concepts really well. So, like I said, I used this app like a long time ago, and I don't really have all the screenshots because I started it long before we started this podcast. So, taking screenshots of apps just wasn't on my mind at the time.
And you told me that there's like a you get a spirit animal at the end. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so as you use it, basically Breeze is an app that measures your steps. It's a step tracking app, and as you use it, it starts to understand more about how you are as a person and how active you are, and it creates for you what they call a spirit animal. And I think what's mine? Let me see. Just pull it up here.
Let me guess. Your spirit animal was a duck. Actually, I feel like that would be my spirit animal.
No, so I am actually a capricious fox.
Capricious.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And
What does capricious mean?
you'll have to look it up.
That's a cool word. That's like a fun word to
Yeah.
say.
And then it gives me like
Capricious
a
fox.
little text description. So it says, you're not just sly, you're also steady, especially in the middle of the day. So,
Interesting.
you know, it says like I'm
Oh.
active during the midday, I move in long activities, and mostly active during the weekdays.
Okay, yeah, I just looked up capricious for those interested. Adjective given to sudden and unaccounted changes of mood or behavior. Interesting.
But another
Capricious.
nice thing
Your
that they
word of the
do,
day for the Design Review Podcast,
yeah,
capricious.
you're learning not just about design.
So for me, we're kind of running out on time here, but I'll just talk about MailChimp real quick. MailChimp, of course, is one of those things where they have got a lot of really talented designers, just but it's so funny because it's not over-designed. For the amount of like design work that goes in, you'd think MailChimp would be over-designed by now. But I think they do these really well. One is, obviously there's always a reaction, but it's always very logical. Everything's very linear. Like when you're creating a mailing to go out, the whole process is very linear. And like the match between system and real world says, it also says like making things appear natural, familiar to the user, and using natural sounding language and words. And I think they do a really good job at this because they'll take something very complicated, like why they need your address for these emails. And they'll explain it in like a sentence, and it'll make sense. You'll be on board, and it's completely understandable. And they do this all over the app of just very excellent copy. And a lot of times, as user experience designers or user interface designers, we don't really think about the copy too much, or sometimes we're waiting for copy to come to us. But I mean, that's an interface, right? And I think we talked about this in play. Like that's also your brand. Every error message, every confirmation button can be part of your brand. So yeah, really bringing in that natural speak, understandable, really helps a lot. And I think they do that really well. Also, they have the right messaging at the right time. So when you have a question kind of come up, like, okay, should I send this or is this going to go out at the right time? They're always answering it. A good example of that is like when you're not sure if it's East Coast, like they're going to show it's East Coast. This is going to be this, it's going to go out at you, this time, your time. So they kind of have like already thought out all the questions that people might ask. So yeah, so the visibility of system status also is the old, tried and true bar, when you're going through like a long multi-step process.
Oh yeah, those things.
So yeah, they have that. They have that at the bottom. So as you're going through and you're doing all the things to put together a mailer to go out for the design review, for example, it moves you along that bar, right. and that's like a very tried and true, really good pattern to use when you're dealing with a lot. The user having to do a lot of stuff in a linear way. I mean, there really isn't much else that's better than that. It really helps people set expectations for what's about to come. I have a couple more steps to go, and it gives immediate feedback of, okay, where am I in this? You know, where, what, how many, is it about to go out? No. I have like four more steps. I don't need to freak out yet.
Yeah. It's at the bottom.
So, yeah. I think they put it at the bottom. Yeah.
That's an innovation because they're usually at the top.
Yeah, I think they kind of want to make it more of an aside, you know, because also the next, because they're kind of the next button is also on that same bar. You can kind of go between it, kind of it, because it's grouped that way. Yeah. You associate that next button is going to move you along that axis, which makes sense. Yeah, and again, they really don't assume you know jargon. I think that's something that I always have to catch myself on is, okay, the PRT, the CPL, you know, just going to loop that back in and we're going to take care of you, you know, and I think that's a good user experience, but we always forget that users aren't talking to jargon every day that we are, you know, with the marketing team or within the company. So yeah, they do that a really good job. So my biggest thing takeaway is just natural speak and, you know, giving them that bar, I think, was another really good example.
Yeah.
So yeah, to reiterate, we went over the two of the 10 heuristics, usability heuristics from the Nielsen-Nelman group. And I think Jacob Nielsen was the author of this article.
Yeah. He wrote this a long time ago.
Yeah.
I have like his first edition like usability book from like a long time ago.
Nice. You should hold on to that. I know. Sell it later.
Well, it's funny because when you look through it, it's got like pictures of websites from like the 90s. So it's like, you know, Netscape is like the browser Chrome and like... It's like, wow. There's Yahoo, the old Yahoo, not the new Yahoo.
So yeah, visibility of system status and the match between system and the real world.
Yep. Two very important concepts in design.
Yeah, so you know, look around at the apps you use today or the next week or so and see if you can spot where those are where those are working well and where they're not, because that always really helps us, you know, digesting something down and matching patterns to real world stuff. Mm-hmm. And next week we're gonna have two more.
Yep.
Next podcast, which is in 2 weeks. Yep. And that's gonna be user control and freedom. Mm-hmm. And consistency and standards. Mm-hmm. Sounds amazing. but it is. We're going to teach you those and we're going to learn about them and bring you some more examples.
Yep. And of course, we talked about a couple of products. We have Jawbone Up, we have Breeze, and we have MailChimp, all of which are products you should check out. I didn't really like Jawbone Up that much, but but at least check it out and see if it if it makes sense to you.
Also, when we're on the subject of begging and groveling, please review us on iTunes. That helps us in the rankings and that helps us get out to more designers. So that's our goal. So if you can leave us a review, at least give us a quick 5 stars or any stars, yeah. But 5 stars is best. Yeah.
Only 5 stars, please.
Yeah. And yeah, just again, we have our website is designreviewpodcast.com. You can get the RSS feed on there and see all past episodes. And of course, all the links and wonderful things that we've been talking about on this episode.
Yes. Great.
And as always, we want to hear your feedback. So let us know what you think. And we'll catch you next episode.
Yep. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.